This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Seems like this character could have easily gone in the direction of being just the white guy that didn't see the vision. But do you think it was, you know, how did the film and yourself broaden the character so that he was really part of the social change that was going on?
Well, it was a black station. I mean, it played Motown music. It was obviously geared to the vast majority of the population of Washington, D.C., which is black, and the inner city. And so he knew that he had better appeal to the community if he wanted to stay on the air. So bringing Petey Green in was a business decision and a risky one. You know, you have to remember that the ratings, they were trying desperately in any number of ways to improve the ratings, and they just went further and further down. People were not listening. And so when Petey Green arrived at the station, it was a big risk because he was so open and so vulnerable and publicly unchanged from any private behavior, including his language. So it was a risk. At the same time, it was a business adventure. It was not an accident that he chose him. You know, he was feathering his own nest, and that's cool. They became very close. And in the end, he had an opportunity to sell the station to a white consortium for more money, but he realized he owed a debt of gratitude to the black community, and he wanted that station to remain in black hands, and so he sold it to the black consortium. It still owns it.
So this was a one real guy. It wasn't a composite of
no.
the station.
No, he was one guy. Sonderling is a real guy. He's dead now, God rest him. But he was a good and decent man. He had a lot of heart, and he had pretty good taste in radio, you know. And he was in on what has to be considered the invention of talk radio. I mean, it was Petey Green, talk to me. You know, he was the guy. But he was talking to a specific community, you know, one that didn't condemn him for his addictions or his felonies, you know, or for being blunt in his language or assessment of the culture, of the society. You know, he said it like it was, man, you know. And this is at a very critical time in our country. Remember, I knew this time. I lived in the East Coast from 1959 to 1969, you know. I don't remember Petey Green specifically, but I remember, you know, the time and place and the turmoil the country was involved in, you know, in tandem with the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement. And they were inextricably connected, you know. It was about where our priorities were going to land the heaviest, you know. And it was about human rights, human dignity, or, you know, force of will. And it was a great conflict and a wonderful time to be alive. Very tragic time as well, because we lost two of our heroes in Reverend King on April 4th, 68. And less than 60 days later, Bobby Kennedy. And the country never recovered. We lost an opportunity with Robert Kennedy, and we ended up with Richard Nixon, and it's gone downhill ever since. With all due respects to Mr. Carter and Mr. Clinton, it's gone steadily downhill. It's about corporate America that gets the lion's share and their say. You know, most of the people on radio now are the voices and the mindset of corporate America. You couldn't get Petey Green on the radio today. I'm sorry. I think that time passed. They wouldn't tolerate him. They couldn't tolerate that measure of truth with that much passion.
Even Howard Stern or Don.
No, these guys are media stars. They're not social activists. They have no real passion when it comes to risking everything for what you believe. No, they're very well paid. With all due respects, they're very well paid, but they're media stars. They don't risk anything as far as, you know, furthering the truth of an issue or risking anything by becoming involved and advocate peace and justice issues, social justice. No, never. But not going to happen.
Do you recognize any kernel of hope in the cultural environment or in the people that may lead you to believe, well, maybe 10 years from now there will be a resurgence?
Yes, I think the American people are just on this one issue of Iraq have woken up to this administration, that this administration lied and cheated and they all belong in the federal penitentiary, you know, for their actions. And, you know, he used the military to further a political agenda. That's the bottom line. finally, the military is waking up to this. It's very hard to find anyone in the top brass that wants to risk, you know, their reputation by throwing in with this crowd. You know, it's a hopeless situation because it was born in arrogance. Arrogance is ignorance matured. I didn't make the rules. I observed the results. And that's what we're dealing with here. Now, you know, when we started protesting this administration and its policy towards Iraq, 70% of the American people supported this administration. And I was part of the 30 that opposed. Now, 70% of the population is opposed to this administration and 30 support. So as long as you're not uncomfortable being on the side that's not winning, you'll be okay.
don't you think, though, now with the internet, that there's almost the great equalizer, that people can get out there and actually say things? And
no.
Really?
No, because very few people really have access to the internet or know how to use it. This is a great fallacy. It's also like thinking, well, how come we don't know more about the rest of the world? We don't travel to the rest of the world. Only 10% of the American public have passports that have even been out of the country. George Bush had never exited the United States until he became president. He didn't have a clue what was going on in Third World. And most of our citizens have no idea what's happening in Third World and how we affect their lives. You know, we have the most powerful political machine, military machine, and economic machine. We run this whole hemisphere without question or any opposition. There's a little more opposition in the West, Western Europe and Eastern Europe and the Mid East is where most of the opposition comes from for our policies. But we're a disaster in Africa and the Middle East and Central and South America. You know, we've really blown our leadership, and any moral ascendancy we've ever had was sunk with this crowd. You know, they're just despicable, disgraceful bunch, lying businessmen who furthered their own agenda, political agenda, and it cost the lives of, you know, we know so far nearly 4,000 young men and women, able-bodied young men and women, 30, maybe more thousand severely wounded, now handicapped, and their families. How many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis? We know for just 2 million refugees alone, you know, and we're not taking any of them. Switzerland and Sweden and Denmark are taking more than we are, you know. Come on, you know. We furthered our nest. If you applied the same reason for invading Iraq on Korea, that's where we should have gone. You know, all the things they had the weapons. They were an oppressive society. I'm not saying a good thing about Saddam. He was as bad as you could get, but he did not have weapons of mass destruction. You know what I'm saying? So that, you know, it was about oil. It was about ego. He did it because he could. Early in the protest, I was asked by a reporter at a big news conference with an artist against the war, well, are you saying that the president is lying to us? I said, absolutely. That's what he does for a living. That's what most governments do. They call it diplomacy, but it's lying. And the very best of them do it. And they said, well, why do you suppose he was doing this? I said, me personally, I think he wants to hand his father the head of Saddam Hussein and say, you see, Daddy, I have credibility. I did what you could not or would not do. That's what it was all about. And even when he was asked by Bob Woodward before the invasion, did you consult your father, meaning George Sr.? He said, I consulted my heavenly father. Please, you know you're in big trouble. Well, you know, when that goes down.
Being so outspoken, has it ever been detrimental to your own career? Have you ever
lost your job or not? No, really, you know. Yeah, but you see, I don't know myself on the winning side. I'm never comfortable unless I'm uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. I don't want that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in being loved or liked. I'm interested in being free. I'm interested in knowing myself as I really am. I'm interested in uniting the will of the spirit to the work of the flesh. You know, that's the only one that I have to account for is myself. I'm not trying to influence anybody. I don't really care a damn if anybody follows me or believes me. That's not important. I do it for myself so that I will know myself and earn my own freedom. We're not asked to be successful. We're only asked to be faithful. We're not asked to do great things. We're only asked to do all things with great love. That's Mother Teresa's quote. It's one of my favorite. Mm-hmm. And one of my quotes is that the only things that we can take with us when we leave this life are the things which we cherished and gave away with love, including our precious time. And that's all that interests me, because I'm not going to be able to lay off, you know, on my government, my actions, when it comes to the end of my life. Oh, I would have done more service to justice or peace or the poor. I would have spoken out if my government would have only supported me. No. They won't be there to intercede for me, between me and my soul. You know, my own salvation is what's at stake. And all of us have to answer for that. I mean, I can't answer. And everything that I've been involved in has not improved. It's gotten worse. You know, all the issues have gotten worse.
Why don't you run?
No, because that's not what I do. I have a clue. And I could not serve a specific constituency. I'd have to serve my own spirit, you know. Mm-hmm. I was asked to get involved, on one level, politically. I can't do. I'm not interested in politics. I'm interested in social justice. But I think I had to make it clear to them that they were confusing credibility with celebrity, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a big difference. I'm not qualified for public service, so you know.
Do you have any picks? I mean, I'll just ask you, but do you have any picks for the upcoming 2008?
Well, I have a great fondness for Governor Richardson, and I think he's probably the most qualified of the lot. But I'm holding an outright support, although I support him, from the candidates that are now going, but because I believe that Mr. Gore is going to come in, and maybe before Labor Day. I think he will be the next candidate, and I think he'll be the next president. I really do.
I mean, I
deservedly so.
Have you heard that?
I can't. I've heard not from him specifically, you know what I'm saying? But there's a lot of move among the Democrats that... And yeah, it's no secret that Mrs. Clinton was, of course, qualified, and I would love to support. But the angst is that she could win the nomination and not the election. That Fred Thompson could beat her, you know, or Giuliani.
Don't you get the feeling though that there's almost a groundswell of support right now for Gore, and especially his environmental issues, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's been so dignified. And,
yes. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think that if ever a nation needed a public servant desperately, it's now, and he's the one. I think he's starting to realize that, you know, would he want to go through it again and put his family through it again and accept that? I don't know, man. You know, I wouldn't ask it of anyone, but, you know, he has the experience, and he's done more than any public servant living for the world, not just our country and the environment, but for the world, the measure of hope that he has provided, and the inspiration that he's provided. And he may win the Nobel Peace Prize, which wouldn't hurt either, next fall, you know. If that went down, why, we've never had a president that I can remember that won the Peace Prize. I think we had one Nobel Prize winner, Mr. Wilson, am I mistaken?
Carter.
I don't know. Carter won it. Yes, you're right. After, not as he was president. I think Mr. Wilson won it. Some part of economics, maybe? I don't know.
Just to add to the fire, just one word, immigration.
Oh, Jesus. Both my parents were immigrants. My father could not get into the United States in 1914. He was 16 years old. He came with his brother, Alfonso, because there was a quota against Spaniards. Not against Hispanics, but Spaniards, because of the Spanish-American War, which we...
Christ. Okay.
Started, you know. And so he was denied entrance at Port of New York, and he went to Cuba. And my father was in Cuba with his brother for several years, and he saved his money. And he came into the United States through Miami and worked his way up to Dayton, Ohio. He was naturalized in Philadelphia, not New York. So, and he met my mother in Ohio, and that's where I was born eventually. But, don't get me started on immigration. We are a nation of immigrants. We are so made. And we must not forget it. This whole issue is one of bullying, you know. Finally, we have someone to blame for all our problems. It used to be Al-Qaeda. It used to be this one or that. No, now it's the immigrant. They're responsible for all of our problems. What a load of bullshit, you know. Got to give thanks and praise for these people. Welcome them in. Praise them.
you've been part of many projects that have impacted social, cultural, and political feelings. Do you have a sense when you're in them that this one's going to connect like that?
No. In fact, no. I never think that it's going to go beyond what I'm asked to do. You know what I'm saying? I never invite anyone to go with me, you know, to you know, stand with me or protest or be a part. I never, ever do that because that's so deeply personal, you know, to actually go out there and stand. And, you know, I'm the biggest sissy I know. I'm not joking. I hate doing it. I worry about it, personal attacks and physical retaliation. Yes, I'm concerned about it. I have a family, you know. I had to put a gate up at my house because there were so many lunatics coming around, you know, to protest me and throw things at the house, and my family was innocent, you know. So, no, I don't look forward to it, but and when I haven't done anything significant, except in my own soul, you know. But I don't advocate. I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm not leading a movement or an organization. No, none. And I'm not able to do that. I'm a Catholic who believes in the command of the gospel to do nonviolence, to love mercy, to do justice, and to walk humbly. Basically, that's the four energies that we have to, you know. Our founder was the nonviolent Jesus. Jesus did not approve of violence, and it cost him his life. They didn't kill him because he was a nice guy. Killed him because he was demanding, you know, heart of the law, not the letter of the law. And he was an itinerant rabbi. And it took both of them to get rid of him, church and state, equally. You know, get rid of this guy because he's changing the situation, the power structure. Actually, he was examining it in a human way. He was leading with his heart, not the law, you know. And he changed the world, you know. But he was nonviolent. And we've forgotten that. We have a just war theory. Sorry. Jesus did not say, well, there'd be no war except, you know, when you deal with this one or that. Sorry. You know. And we have, you know, we've hijacked the gospel and made it according to our ego. God is a reflection of who we are, you know. I went to confession to a priest in a rural community down south one time. I was on the road working for a candidate, and the priest, and we started talking about theology, and I was just amazed at this guy. He said to me at one point, "We don't know what God is, do we?" And he asked it as if, well, maybe I ran into someone who does, you know. I mean, do you have an opinion? He was like saying, you know, I thought, wow, what the humility of that and the reality of that. We don't know what God is. God is the great mystery. And every explanation that I have heard about God is usually what God is not. You know, so what is God? For me, as a Christian, as a Catholic, the genius of God is hiding within us, choosing to be human, flesh and blood, and choosing to hide where we would least expect to find that presence, within ourselves. Because once I look at myself and I can say, whoa, okay, God chose that? Okay, what about you? You can't be any different. And you. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes a recognition of our humanity with everyone else. And that's the thing that connects us to everyone else, is that presence. It's in you and you and you and you, you know. But I have to find it in myself first and accept it, you know. But we usually start from the outside and we project God. Oh, God is there. We start punishing people and, you know, and God becomes a reflection of our ego rather than we don't know what God is, you know, the great mystery, I think. Well, I'm sorry to get into a theological discussion. But
I just want to quickly ask you about, I mentioned about that BHP Billiton Malibu protest that was out there a couple months ago.
Oh, yes, yes. You were from Australia, weren't you? Yes,
you guys, yes. You guys won, and it was very successful.
Well, thanks to Mr. Oh, yes. Okay, good. I would, yeah. Tell me your first name.
Fred,
sorry. Yes, that was a quiet victory. Mm. Thanks to Mr. Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. No, seriously, he got the message, you know. Mm-hmm. And he served the right cause there. I'm going to say peace here. There you go. Today's date is 6:20. Okay, or 7. But yeah, I knew you, and I couldn't remember from where.
I caught you on the way out. No, the very successful.
Thank you all very, very much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
One of my heroes is coming in here.